sometimes say, and I really believe, that one of the benefits of this practice, one of the places that I hope you and I go as a result of the practice, is that we get larger as people. I just encourage you to get physically larger, to straighten up and open up. I think that's part of the journey, in fact. But when I say getting bigger, I really mean it in two ways, besides just getting bigger physically and more open. One of those ways is that by sitting, we discover another part of ourselves that is quiet. And that part of ourselves becomes part of our self and our identity and our everyday life. It seems like the practice is making us smaller, is all about getting smaller. I mean, giving up ourselves and shedding all of our thoughts and reflections, giving up ourself, dying sometimes, some people say. That feels like, seems like it's getting smaller. But by discovering this other part of ourselves, in fact, the feeling I have is that the world, our world, gains a dimension. It's almost as if it gets three-dimensional instead of two-dimensional. We have the social aspect of life, which we have learned, and I certainly enjoy. But there is this other, like the poem I read from last week. What's her name? Mary Oliver. That poem, Mindful, I was just going to quote one little bit of it, which she talks about that she learned as a poet that to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world. And as a poet, she instructs herself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations of life. Yesterday I was doing a bookkeeping. It was not working out well. But I tried as a practice to remember that when I shuffle papers, noise happens. That I have a bottom that is sitting on the chair. That's part of the equation of doing the bookkeeping. That the sun coming in through the window is also part of life. That rounds our life out in a way, and I think it gives us a grounding influence so that we're not toppled over by the distress of that $150 that was not not allowing me to reconcile the month of April. So I really feel as if we have a chance to become larger, but because we know this quiet aspect, and we allow more things in, not just our social world, but also the world as it is. And you could even say, you could make an argument, and Zen does, that all of these things that come to us, the rustle of the paper, the the sun streaming in, when they happen, they are part of ourselves. It's like that poem from Whitman. You know, a child went forth and everything he met, he became for a day or a part of a day or stretching cycles of years. All of these things he became. And then he lists all, of course, in Whitman-esque fashion, all of those things that that child became, met, and became. So, if we're open to it, we become the sound of the birds, we become the cool breeze. And that also is part of ourselves, as well as the part that we think of as ourself and our life. So that's one way we get bigger. The other way we get bigger, from my point of view, is in the way that we... So that's kind of more of a meeting of the outside. But we also, in this practice, can get bigger on the inside. And what I mean by that is we get bigger by realizing that we are not only the story that we tell about ourselves, but we are also, which Robert Bly calls the sunshine self, but we are also the shadow self. And that we, through this practice and other ways of practicing and learning and living and growing up, can reconcile those parts, those halves of ourself. This, the poem I read last time was, just delight, was talking about the delight in losing ourselves and being close to, and how does she start it? Every day I see or hear something more or less that more or less kills me with delight and leaves me like a needle in a haystack of light. That's the light part. But it's also the opening up to the present moment. But part of this practice is also dark. Going to a retreat, for instance, I used to feel going into a week-long retreat some real apprehension. One is what it might feel like. Sometimes it hurts, these retreats, physically. But that was not really it. What it really is opening yourself up to yourself and anything that might come up. I can keep myself pretty well distracted by life most of the time. But committing to sit on a cushion, part of that commitment is not just committing to the sound of the bee or whatever comes up, but it's also committing to being with ourselves and whatever dark or light might come up there. And to be sure, on the way down, this is the way I think of it, on the way down to that quiet place, lake, we will meet all kinds of people and demons. And part of our practice has to be to carefully approach those demons and become skillful in getting to know them, you could say embracing them on the way down to that quiet place. the way I see it, if we have done that work on the way down, then those demons aren't, you know, having a good time throwing rocks into our lake of tranquility. But they're sitting with us because we've gotten to know them. We've gotten to, you know, they're facing the same way as us. That's easy to say, and it's kind of harder to do, to know how to approach the darker elements within ourselves. I've been reading up on shadows, both in a couple of books here. Feeding Your Demons by Soltram Alione. That's the Jeff Tipp recommended last summer when he gave a talk here. And then I got this little book of Human Shadow by Robert Bly, which has been also really, I like both of them, haven't finished either one. But for Bly, a shadow is that which we don't want to recognize in ourselves. You know, demons for Soltram Alione are things more like, things that we fear. For Bly, it's things that we don't recognize, don't want to recognize within ourselves. I know that feeling so well in just small matters, you know. Like when I screw up, when I forget an appointment, I have this feeling like I don't want to inhabit this body temporarily. I want to get out of it to somewhere else because I don't want that to be part of me. Like, that's not me, you know. I'm a regular, responsible person. That aspect is not really me. And to take a breath and embrace that screwed up part of myself is a different way of approaching that. And I really think it makes me bigger because it incorporates that part of myself that is forgetful or irresponsible or angry at my kids, to incorporate that part of myself, to realize that, oh, that also is myself. That is, it has me to relax and stop fighting temporarily. And this practice, I think, can really help open up that, both because we get quiet and we allow those things to come up, and also because we can approach whatever comes up, I think, as we practice, with a little more equanimity and acceptance. Just yesterday, while I was doing the bookkeeping, I was listening to NPR. I don't know if that's a smart thing to do, but I was. And they had this, and Lars was listening as well. So we listened to this episode, this little interview with a guy who wrote a book called The Buddha Pill. Anybody hear that yesterday? No. Did you hear it?
Yes, I did too.
Yeah, very interesting. It was on CBC, I think. And the guy, Englishman, was saying that, you know, he was really taking a close and harsh look at meditation and the studies that have been done on meditation, and saying that, you know, essentially, there's a real dark side to meditation. Things can come up that drive people nuts, you know, or that really can lead to mental illness or help, like that. Or I don't know if he was exactly saying that, but they don't help. And that some of these studies don't get into that darker side. And Lars afterwards says, boy, he really trashed meditation. And I said, you know, I agree with everything he said in that report. That I love the title, actually, The Buddha Pill. That this is not a pill that we take that makes us feel better. And sometimes it's spun as that. This, you know, mindfulness, like, take this pill and you'll feel good. There is a good feeling aspect to this for me, you know. It's one of the reasons I do it. But another reason I do it is because I think it makes me more whole. It allows me to do the harder work of embracing that shadow side. First of all, recognizing it, allowing it to come up, and then finding a way to approach it and embrace it. So, I like that darker aspect of practice, and I think it's one that is that's too often overlooked in the popular press. Well, I think I'll end with the suggestion that really, first of all, just to say that, of course, I feel like I've just scratched the surface of this topic, but I think Buddhism helps, this Buddhist path, one of the things it does is help enlarge us by getting us in touch with this, the aspects of ourselves that we don't, that are hidden from us and that are darker. And sitting helps with this. There are three kind of jewels of practice that go way back to the Buddha's time. The Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Sitting helps with this because it opens ourselves up to places that we don't normally inhabit or know. The Dharma piece helps because if we're in a community, this stuff should be talked about. That's one of the things that the guy on the radio said. Ask your teacher mentions that it can be, talks about the fact that it can be difficult. And the difficult things can come up. Then that's a pretty good sign. If they're Pollyanna, then that's not a good sign. And then things like this, I think, are Dharma too. Whether it be Buddhist or, you know, non-Buddhist, to find ways to approach that shadow side, whether it's within Buddhism or outside Buddhism. That's the Dharma aspect. And the Sangha aspect is also important, I think, because that's the community aspect. And both of these authors talk about noticing what makes you angry in other people. Because we so often cast our shadows out upon other people. You know, the things that we don't want, projecting, that is to say, projecting the negative aspects out onto other people. And when we do a community practice in which we're rubbing up against each other regularly, we have a chance to learn something about ourselves. This is a very basic Buddhist concept, that we learn something about ourselves by the way that we, you know, like or dislike others. It does have something to do with adjusting things to the way to suit ourselves, but a much more interesting lesson is what it teaches, what those conflicts teach us about ourselves. So that's the beginning, anyway, of I wanted to talk about the shadow side and learning to embrace our shadow side. I'd like to talk about it more later this year.